This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your I ain't never seen two pretty podcasts. It's always one of them. That's not your number one source of music news and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
Heaven sent you to me. I'm just hoping I don't repeat history. Boy, I'm trying to meet your mama on a Sunday. The nigga I love on a Monday. Never need no one else, babe. Cause I'll be switching the positions for you.
It is election week slash month in America. We are deep into the coronavirus pandemic. We are deep into some quasi-quar, which is to say that even though things out in the world are in turmoil and not totally back to the normal level of absurdity of the American experiment, certain things are healing and certain people are returning to the fore after a little bit of time locked in along with the rest of us. Ariana Grande is back with her sixth album. It's called Positions. The thing about this Ariana record that I like a lot is it feels very much off the cuff, but also really playing to her vocal strengths. Ariana, in my mind, is probably the best pure singer of any contemporary mainstream pop star, for sure. But her references are just much more interesting, and she plays with rhythm and cadence and texture, and she is a powerful singer, but also like a lighthearted songwriter. And I think all of those things really come together very well on this record. I didn't get to write about this record, so I have not been writing much lately because of some things happening out in the world, but I'm excited to talk about it. So we're going to have two conversations about Ariana today. One, Lindsay Zolads, who did write about it for the paper, is going to call in and we're going to chat about this record and Ariana's role in pop and beyond. And then later, Shad D'Souza is going to call in. Shad wrote about this record for The Fader and actually did not like this record, and then wrote about it, which feels like an act of bravery in the year 2020 to say that you don't like an album by a very famous pop star with a vicious fan army, and caught all kinds of terrible heat. But I actually sort of enjoyed the review, and I'm excited to talk to Shad about the things that I liked and he didn't, and that he liked and that I didn't, and so on. So without further ado, let's kick it off with Lindsay Zolads. Lindsay, the MPAA is trying to hold you down, trying to hold Ariana Grande down. The PMRC is out here. But you, nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I got a parenthetical nice into the New York Times print.
I wish I had a soundboard because I want to like do like a train whistle or something, like woo woo, like, you know, just, you know,
that works.
That's good. This Sasufi. So Lindsay, you got to write about Positions. Let's talk a little bit about this album in the broader context of Ariana's career. Actually, when I was listening to this record the other day, I found myself with like actually a rather unexpected amount of thoughts about this album.
Mm.
Both about the context in her career and also about the context in terms of pop and R&B and so on. But let's start with how does this compare and where does this fall in the arc of Ariana's own stuff?
Her arc is very interesting because I think that it's not as cut and dry as some people want to sort of make this distinction. And I guess to be fair, I did not argue this in the review, but there, I think Thank You Next was seen as a turning point for a lot of people, which is her last record from 2019. And I think part of why it felt like such a turning point was that it came 6 months after she had put out Sweetener, which was a more traditional, overblown, had, you could say, I do really like that record. And I kind of
does not hold up.
Not as well as Thank You Next, I don't think. But I also think that the sort of dichotomy of, you know, she was this very traditional pop star before and then released this intimate album that named her exes by name and sort of flipped the script in all these ways. I don't think that necessarily holds either.
Who among us, really?
We've all been there. we've all flipped that script. But I think My Everything, her 2014 record, was very good and was eclectic in ways that sort of gave a hint of what was to come. She worked with a lot of interesting collaborators and producers that were kind of surprising for a star, you know, coming out of this Nickelodeon tradition and people trying to kind of fit her into that almost like Miley Cyrus adjacent world that she never really quite fit into. I think she has had a more open and curious ear for a long time that I don't think Thank You Next was like completely this aberration from everything she had done before, but it certainly was a risk and sort of putting the focus back solely on her. I think part of, I'd imagine what you don't like about Sweetener is it was like a Pharrell record, basically. At least a few of the songs, there were Beyoncé demos floating around. Like they were songs that had kind of been passed around to various A-list pop stars and could have been made by a number of other people. I think Thank You Next was the first record in our sort of understanding of Ariana as this star that felt like it only could have been made by her. And I think Positions also feels like that for me.
Can I problematize or build upon,
please,
what you just said?
Do both.
Here's my thing with Ariana, early Ariana. There are all these contexts that I think people have historically slotted her into, whether it's post-Nickelodeon Disney, conventional pop star, young R&B singer, whatever. There are these pathways that I think it's been convenient to read her through. That said, the thing that Ariana has always had that has made it a hard thing to put her cleanly into any of those pathways is this incredible, very specific vocal talent. And her vocal talent is its power. I wouldn't say it's deep depth, but there's depth to it. And it's also her fluency in the kind of good versions of melisma, probably some of the bad versions of melisma, but like her fluency in that stuff gleaned from the kind of late Whitney into Mariah era and absorbed, has always made it a little bit of a challenge when Ariana was trying to do what I would ordinarily consider conventional pop star records. And I think about like the dance record with like Zed or whatever. There was like some, remember the one with like the weird psychedelic?
Yeah.
A fine record, but it's almost like she's trapped in the record. Her voice is actually bigger than that record. And so anytime she tried to do things that seemed like 2013, 2016, whatever, pop star, in quotes, she always felt a little bit off to me. She always felt a little bit hemmed in. Where I always felt like Ariana shined in her early years was, in a weird way, the more boring songs, like the big torch song, ballad type records, things where you just have a big pipe and you just blow, you know, you just go. Her voice allows for it, but that's not the currency of contemporary pop stardom. So even when she had kind of like successful songs, and like I'm thinking, I don't know if Almost Is Never Enough, but like is a huge song, but it's like a very, I love that song. Even when she had successes along those lines, they weren't necessarily like fitting in with the rest of what was happening with pop. So I always felt that she was an outlier from all these pop narratives, even though she was kind of like adjacent to or mildly Venn diagram overlap with each of them, but never like fully, fully locked in.
This record, in some ways, it's her return to Yours Truly, the first album, which was kind of her R&B album in a way. And it was a more mature record, I think, than a lot of people were expecting. Like, a former Nickelodeon star to come out with. It wasn't sort of that big pop grab that the songs you're talking about were on the next record. So she did kind of like initially establish herself as this almost traditional, like you said, like Whitney and Baby Mariah sort of vein, that I do think she's taken a sort of a long way around getting back to that. But I think this record kind of puts her in her own voice back to just a more personalized and maybe kind of eccentric and idiosyncratic version of what she was doing in 2013. But it feels hemmed in is a good way to describe some of her earlier music too. She always seemed a little bit weirder too than the music was able to get her to express. And now she's sort of reached this place where she's being as weird as she wants. And I love it.
Right. She's being as weird as she wants. She's being as overt as she wants. Mm-hmm. She's being as
vulgar.
Yes, that is one. Yes. Overt and vulgar are not strictly speaking synonyms, but overt is definitely me being trying to be nice and not say vulgar, but by all means, let's say vulgar. Okay. So we open with Positions, which is like, I think a fine song. It's a little mid, but like, I think it's a solid, solid song. Since we're on the subject of loocheness, let's play something nice. Let's play a little bit of a 34 plus 35 thinky face emoji.
You might think I'm crazy, the way I've been craving. If I put it quite plainly, just give me them babies. So what you doing tonight? Better say doing you right. Watching movies, but we ain't seen a thing tonight. I don't want to keep you up, but show me, can you keep it? To keep you up, so maybe I'ma keep you up. But I've been drinking coffee, and I've been eating healthy. No one keeps squeaky, saving up my energy. Can you stay up all night? Love me till the daylight. 34, 35. Can you stay up all night? Love me till the daylight.
There are some relatable lyrics on this song. Watching movies, but we ain't seeing a thing tonight. In total, this is the second song on the record, and it is a high sweat factor. The thing about Ariana when she goes down this road is she still is, I think, consciously and self-consciously playing off of the kind of demure part of her image from the early part of her career. When I interviewed her in, I don't remember, 2015, 2014, something like that, there was this part of the conversation talking about singing about sex, but or maybe bringing in collaborators who were more explicit or overt on those subjects and kind of like addressing those subjects through this secondhand process. We're past that now.
Yes. And if anything, she's being more explicit than I think some of the collaborators that she has on. Like, I think you're probably one of the songs you're probably thinking about in particular is Love Me Harder with The Weeknd from
Yes.
My Everything, where, you know, I remember at the time there being some sort of pearl clutching around some of the lyrics, not that she was singing, but like he was kind of getting in these lyrics about whatever.
I do want to clarify, I don't even own any pearls, so how could I clutch them? So, like, you know, it's like a way that you can avoid pearl clutching if you're the type to pearl clutch is just let go of your pearls. It's very easy.
Yeah, mine are locked away in the closet. Never wear them. Can't
Never
clutch
to be
them.
Clutched. Never to be clutched.
Yeah, but there, I do sort of remember it. Again, she was a young adult woman at that time. I think she was probably 21 or 22 when that record came out. But I got the sense, and you, I remember, wrote about this at the time, that she was sort of dipping a toe into, you know, the kind of maturity that we code in that way of the female, usually pop star. And by having other collaborators and rappers on her songs to say some of the things that maybe she could not yet make that leap. And it is funny to hear The Weeknd now on this record of hers 6 years later, where it doesn't feel anymore like, oh, she's the little girl that can't hear this explicit right. Weeknd stuff. It's more like she's going toe-to-toe. And that song actually is one of, I think, the more demure songs on this record.
I actually agree. Considering that we are at kind of like awakened Ariana and Able is always Able, or mostly always Able, I agree that like...
It's kind of PG Able, actually.
Yes, it's, yeah, yes, it's a simmer. It's not a boil.
Yeah, and there is an overt gesture back on their new duet on Positions with The Weeknd off the table.
Let me help you through it. You try to feel the boy, then a couple boys. I can see right through it. I can love you more than I did before. Was in a dark place back then. I was toxic, and I was toxic to someone else. I was haunted by the years.
They're playing around with that sort of history and memory. And again, it does, I think a lot of this record, more so than Thank You Next, is kind of asking you to look back at Ariana's arc a little bit and to both see how far she's come, but see what seeds of a record like this were always in her music. And I don't think it's that much of a, you know, radical break from her past so much as a kind of growth into some things that, some elements that were always there.
My version of what you're just saying is it's like the casual version of some of the earliest successes. And especially, I mean this lyrically, there's something offhand, conversational, intimate, not necessarily sexually intimate, although that as well, but intimate in the sense of like, I think the word bestie pops up somewhere in your piece, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, it's like intimate in that way, like, you know, just chatting with the people who know me the best or are the closest to me, who I have to do the least amount of explaining or kind of like filigree around. It's like that manner applied to some of the types of songs that she succeeded with early in her career. You know, you listen to Thank You Next as an album and the whole thing does have like a very appealing looseness, and that's in every aspect of the record, lyrics, song structure, production, etc. This has a little bit more of a embrace between that tenor and structures that she has thrived in earlier in her career and kind of built her name on.
She has talked about sort of paring down her inner circle in a way that she's making music with. There are definitely a lot of collaborators and co-writers that she works with, but it's on these last two records, it's become a pretty tight-knit group of people, even though there were a few Max Martin songs on Thank You Next, but they somehow didn't really feel like Max Martin songs. Like I kind of can't recall offhand which ones were and which ones weren't. Like that was a very cohesive aesthetic on that record that didn't feel like it was grabbing for these big pop hits. But I think that her part of that paring down is out of necessity. So much of how she's evolved also has to do with the circumstances that she's lived through and the ways in which she has found a safe space to create music that sort of addresses the trauma that she has been through and calling it trauma and really digging into anxiety and mental states in her music too. And I think to do that, she had to surround herself with people that knew her and co-writers that she could just kind of bounce these ideas off of. And I mentioned in the piece, Victoria Monet and Taylor Parks are two of the artists that she's been working with them and writing with them since the first record, but they seem like they're actually friends. And
yeah, it's like a mind. There's like a mind meld thing happening on these records.
And I do think you get a sense from her later records, especially, of just like some people just hanging out in the studio, kind of goofing off sometimes, just riffing off each other, almost like daring each other to keep a silly line in the song. Like there is a part in the interview I mentioned in my review that she did with Zach Tsang.
Zach Tsang.
I think the line in 3435 where she says, if I put it quite plainly, just give me them babies, was one of her co-writers was like jokingly suggested that as a lyric. And then she was like, oh no, that's going to print. That's in the song. And even the co-writer in her telling was surprised by that. So there's that energy of that I think has made her music feel a lot more loose and personal and appealing in a lot of ways. Of you do, I think, more so than a lot of pop stars at her level and at the level of just polish going into something like that, it still retains this energy of just like friends in a room riffing on an inside joke in some way. And I think that's hard to keep that intact as well as she does at the level that she's at.
That is, to be fair, also how every edit with Karen and I go and myself go, where she's like, oh yeah, this is a joke. And I'm like, no, that's going to print, FYI.
There you go.
Yeah. So
the
just,
Ariana,
you know,
of podcasting right here.
Yes, absolutely. Since we're talking about offhand lyrics, I would love to listen to and then spend just a moment thinking about Manifestation, which is to say, Just Like Magic.
Just like magic, middle finger to my thumb and then I snap it. Hey. Just like magic, I'm attracted. I get everything I want because I attract.
So the very first time I listened to this record, I got to this song. It's the fourth song, I think. And I kind of groaned, if I'm going to be honest. And I groaned for a couple of reasons. One, you know, if you were to read these lyrics on paper, they sound like bad late Madonna lyrics. I get everything I want because I attract it, yada, yada, yada. Now, of course, late Madonna predates Instagram Manifestation. So, you know, Madonna was both early and also out of step at the moment. Ariana is definitely doing like a post-Instagram era Manifestation conversation here. But the way that this song is written, it feels like a rough draft. And I think when I first listened to it, I found that to be a negative. And over time, I've come to think of it as actually like low-key a positive, even though I'm not sure I love the song. I end up kind of grudgingly okay with the lyrical looseness.
I really like that song, even though it's kind of, I don't want to say it's a guilty pleasure because that doesn't exist.
That doesn't
exist. There's no such thing.
It's not a thing. Not real.
But I can understand like the ways the song shouldn't work. And then I just find myself listening to it anyway. And like, it's just like, it's a really sweet melody. And I do think she like believes that. It feels like a very personal expression of like her ethos and beliefs. And also, I made this joke already on Twitter, but but it probably should have been on the soundtrack to the Secret Dare to Dream film. I bet they're very much regretting that it came out after the film. But it's very, it's like Manifestation core.
I do want to say that much like when Netflix like resurfaced Cobra Kai and kind of like gave it a whole new audience, that's how you should consider your tweets for Popcast.
Okay.
You know, maybe it's a tiny bit old. Maybe some people have seen it. There are untold masses listening who are hungry for it.
I'm only going to speak in old tweets now the rest of this episode.
I think I'm honestly not no is what I say to okay. that. So I like you. I mostly like that song, maybe like a touch less than you do, but even though I was resistant to it. And I think I was trying to get to the bottom of why I was resistant to it. And maybe it's because I myself am not manifested in my life. That's certainly, you know, open question, TBD, could happen. What I kind of ended up boiling it down to was something that I couldn't fully reconcile. And that is the tension between like the real casualness of the lyric, the writing, and to some degree the melody with what I still am holding on to as far as the kind of like extreme rigor of her vocal talent. And something about like that intense, talented voice doing a thing that feels very offhand, that's where I think the, for me, like the juxtaposition is like a little bit off.
What songs on this record do you feel like she's using her vocal talent in a way that works more for you?
The Weeknd song, Off the Table. I think Shut Up, some of those layered harmonies on Shut Up. My Hair.
Yeah.
Those three songs, I didn't know in advance I was going to pick those songs, but I think what those songs have in common, those are more or less the R&B songs on this record. And I have a lot to say about the R&B aspects of this record. The thing on the, with Off the Table, Abel is like extremely in his like mid-80s to early 90s post-Quiet Storm Peebo Bryson into James Ingram bag. Like, there is a thing about his voice when he chooses to go kind of like classic. And I don't mean classic like Marvin Gaye era classic. I mean kind of like 80s balladry classic, like big bombastic stuff. He very much has that in him. And he's done some successful stuff in that tone. And he's also done some less than successful stuff, just kind of like coasting a little bit on how good his voice can be. But this song really felt like some like late period to post Quiet Storm that I would have played on my college radio show at like 3 a.m. on a Saturday night into Sunday morning. And so it's not surprising that Ariana sounds very good and very R&B and very powerful on that. My Hair, you know, you've got that Branford Marsalis type sax halfway through.
Just like these inches down my back. Usually don't let people touch it, but tonight you'll get a pass. Spend my
day. Is anybody mad on Twitter about my hair? Potentially, like, sort of like appropriative, or is that a thing? Has that conversation happened at all?
I don't think so, because her hair is a weave. So.
Yes, right, exactly. No, there is that. I just didn't know if anybody had kind of been like, this is like almost like a quasi Jill Scott record sung by a young white singer. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? It seemed like a take someone could have. Blessedly, I have not been on Twitter very much for the last few weeks. So if someone did have that take, it escaped me.
The take, this is definitely something that I've thought about and didn't really get to in the review, but I think this record, it struck me more than the last one of, you know, she has been borrowing from hip hop for, you know, increasingly on every record more and more. And, you know, there are certain cadences and phrasings of hers that are definitely pulling from Black artists at this point and pretty overtly. I do think she seems aware of that and is trying to do it in a certain way that is not maybe going to get her called out in the way that it might, like Miley Cyrus or something. But
yeah,
you know,
and her main collaborators are two Black women.
Yes. Yeah. The women that are in the room with her writing and coming up with some of these lines. And I think it should be sort of a larger conversation, but there's a moment actually in that Thang interview, which is really that she hasn't done very candid press in a while. And this, it seems like this is like the guy that she gives her big interviews to on these last two records. And there's a moment where he talks about like her use of skirt often. And he thought that was like an Ariana Grande thing. And she very quickly was like, no, that's, I didn't invent that. Let's not put that out there in the world. Like,
oh, I think that's funny. She knew, okay.
You could see like her acknowledging the possibility of that narrative in real time and being like, no, 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 that's something that like all rappers say now. And I'm just like borrowing that. Let's not talk anymore about that. There was like an awareness in her, I think, too, that she's really towing a certain line and definitely should be a conversation that we have about her music. I think by and large, she's been able to sidestep, I guess, Seven Rings. There was a bit of...
Right, exactly. Right, with the phraseology and the, yes, and the cadence. You mentioned Miley a couple of times already, but this is where Ariana and Miley are very, very different. Ariana was doing pure R&B records from the minute she could do songs that were not Nickelodeon songs, or not Nickelodeon songs, but that she was not in her Nickelodeon character, I should say. She was doing pure R&B. Miley, you know, dive bombs in and out of any number of aesthetics at various levels of success, which is why it was much easier to kind of cast aspersions on Miley's intention, or more likely lack of intention, with her choices. Whereas Ariana, I think, has always pledged fealty to Black forebears, Black influences, and it's both something she has spoken about in the past, and also it is quite literally etched into her vocal tone. On My Hair, the whistle tone, the Mariah thing, you know, this is Ariana reminding us that, like, she can do that too. Now, I don't think she does it quite as well as Mariah does, but, like, you know, she's in the same zip code. She may not be in the same ball field, but she's in the same zip code.
Another element of that song and what it does well too is, while it is this, there is something very sensual about it and kind of like intimate and vulnerable, but it's also playing around with her memed persona in a way of like, the internet loves to talk about her ponytail. And it, yeah. This song is very much an acknowledgement of like a wink at the narrative about how, you know, we never see her without her ponytail. And when she does like post a photo of herself where her hair is down, people freak out and are like, who is this woman? She's very internet savvy. She's seemed like someone who is paying attention to certain parts of the conversation. I mean, we can talk about the video for Thank You Next and all the whole BDE thing. Like, she or someone on her team, maybe we should just not ever talk about that again. I would be down.
People remember.
Yeah, but she,
if you made it this far into this episode, you remember. Yes.
There's a part of her, though, that she does feel online in some way. And,
oh, absolutely.
And finding a way to make even a song like this that's not as jokey as 3435, that is still gesturing towards something about her persona, something about the way she's sort of talked about by her fans and what they pay attention to. Like,
also a Mariah thing.
True, true.
Not to be like Mariah in the episode after the Mariah episode, but here we are.
She's everywhere.
Yeah, and in essence, our second and Mariah episode in a row now.
Ooh.
But this part of the conversation really ties into the other big question that I kind of was grappling with when I was listening to the record, which is, we talked earlier about Ariana's relationship or lack thereof with pop, like pop. What do pop stars do? What sounds do pop stars make? What kind of songs do pop stars in the current context release? What do you think about her relationship with contemporary R&B? The SZAs, the Summer Walkers of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you think that Ariana is engaging with those sounds at all, or those vocal approaches? And the reason that got me thinking about it was, again, on Off the Table, even though there's a lot of powerful singing on that, some of the textural stuff did have a little bit of Summer Walker to me, just like a touch.
Yeah, and I think the song Nasty is another one which I really like that track. That feels, yeah, SZA, Summer Walker, like the production feels indebted to, it's a slower tempo than we usually hear from Ariana. It's just kind of slurry, and
we should listen to Nasty.
So good, it's gonna be hard to break the habit. Feel like like a whole constellation. Yeah. Swimming like you on vacation. Yeah. Promise I'm still gonna love you when you wake up in the AM. I just wanna make time for you. Swear it's just right for you.
Like so given that there are like at least a couple of moments that nod directly or obliquely to those styles, do you think that Ariana understands herself and her music in the context of contemporary R&B? Or do you think that those are kind of like you're waving from like the boat, you know, and like you're waving at someone on the shore and you're kind of like, I see you. I can kind of like, I'm waving at you. I know that you're there, but like, I don't live there. I live over here kind of.
I think it's like halfway. Maybe she's in a smaller boat midway between the shore and the other boat. If we
she's spatially, oh, she's okay. Like a little, so there's two boats now. Okay. Little,
it's like a life raft. No, not that, but like it's
a dinghy. She's in a dinghy.
She's in a dinghy halfway between the shore and the big boat.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, you know, this record certainly feels to just pull like the most extreme, like it feels more in touch with that than say like the latest Katy Perry record or so, like something, someone who's really but someone who's really holding on to that kind Lindsay, of like
I just want to say, Lindsay, I just want to say before you continue the thought, only one person on this podcast has listened to the new Katy Perry record. So
well, Karen I'm just going to too. I mean, no, like, I'm saying in on this world, episode.
Yes.
I right. mean,
I'm just going to defer. I'm going to assume that what you're saying is correct because it makes total sense, but I cannot verify because
save I your just time, didn't. Probably.
Yes.
But thank yeah, you. I, if that's the extreme of kind of sticking to this idea of what a female pop star was 10 years ago and the mainstream singles. And I definitely think, in some ways, Ariana is closer to someone like SZA than someone like Katy Perry at this point, where she, I think, has like started out in that world, like you said, where you do the song with Zedd and you do this and that and get Iggy Azalea on the track and stuff. And she feels like she has found a way to do something that's a little more tailor-made to herself and more personal to her strengths. But that at the same time is probably more successful commercially even than what when she was doing the songs that were supposedly the formula to commercial success. Like she did have a lot of success with those songs, but I think she's kind of leveled up in this way where Positions, the song, just debuted at number one on the Hot 100. I would assume this record, probably by the time you're hearing this, is the number one album. You know, she was certainly a big player in the pop world, but I think something that has been cool about her evolution is the more she sort of becomes herself, the more successful on this grand scale she seems to be becoming.
You mentioned the interview where she talked about putting out music more like a rapper, which is sort of like a big thing for someone who's as famous in her lane as Ariana to say in 2019. But I think what you're saying jibes really neatly with that, which is she has found musical direction that makes sense for her talent, but she has also found a mode of creation. And that mode encompasses pace, texture, lyrical looseness, internet savvy, like all of those things, whatever like bundle of things that is, she has found a mode that's a very modern mode, an extremely 2020 mode. And, you know, when you mention someone like Katy Perry, not only are Katy Perry's musical choices outdated, but her mode is antiquated. Her mode is like burdensome at this point.
Yeah, even the rollout of Positions, it wasn't a surprise album per se, but she announced it, you know, what, 5 days before
yeah, like
it came
a,
out?
Like yeah, like the, a week before, yeah.
The single kind of came out of nowhere, and she seems more adept. Like, she seems like one of the bigger artists right now that can do that and that feels comfortable, you know, releasing music that way. I think it suits her and her fans, too, really well.
Absolutely. I think it's what's making her essentially, I don't want to say she's like of the previous generation in the sense of like the Katy Perrys and Taylor Swifts of the world, but like it's why Ariana can still hold her own in like the Billie Eilish era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think both age-wise, so she's 27 now, and also just in the way she is making music, she seems to me like a bridge between those two eras, maybe of
for sure.
Female pop stars, where she started out, you know, she was on Bang Bang with Jessie J and Nicki Minaj. Like she had a moment of that era, and now is putting out a record like this. Although she also was on the Charlie's Angels song that we've already all forgotten about with Lana Del Rey
Lana. Yeah. Wow. I think in like 5 to 10 years, if Popcast still exists, we're going to have to do a special episode like we did the Ashley Simpson episodes. We're going to have to do it just for that song.
What was it even? I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to know the specific name of it. But if we are all still here 5 to 10 years from now and we are still podcasting on this microphone from my home office, we will have to circle back and have a special episode for that.
Can I say one more thing about Ariana on this record, though? I think something that gets lost in the conversation about her, she's really funny in ways that I don't think she was always able to get across. And I think, I don't know how many...
By licking donuts, you mean?
I mean, she was ahead of her time in that, let's just say it. But I don't know how many Sam and Cat heads I have out there. But even if you watch, I mean, I have admittedly only watched like her Nickelodeon shows for research when writing about her. Slightly too old to like hit that at the right moment. But she was funny on that. Like she was a good comedic actress. I think anyone who's seen her on SNL was pleasantly surprised by that. But there's an element of humor and really just, again, weirdo humor that was always like when you read interviews with her, there was always like something weird she'd say about believing in demons or, you know, like you'd always,
right.
You'd
kind of, oh my God, yeah.
I mean, shout out to the demon interview too, but there was always something where like not all of the pieces of the really pop star mold didn't quite click together. Like there always seemed to be like some part of her that was jutting out and you were like, what's going on there? Like, want to know more about this person. And I think that is why I like a song like 3435, which the first time I listened to it, I was like, this is ridiculous and whatever. And I have grown to kind of love it because it does feel, I don't find that song to be like sexy so much as it's just like funny. Like I think
it's lulz.
And I there's again, not to keep bringing up this only interview she did, but there is a part where she says, I think, like, you know, shout out to anyone who still is surprised when I'm sexual, like it's really funny to me. Like she was being very sarcastic and was like, it's funny, I love it. And I think this is her more like trolling a little bit, for lack of a better word, and trying to push this envelope and see what people will say about it, and then we'll be ready to just kind of roll her eyes at them if they say anything. Because again, I think she's funnier than she gets credit for, which is not always, there's not always like a way to express that when you are a pop star on her level. And I think she's found a way to do that in her music, which is, again, pretty rare.
And also, I think that ties it all up with the mode, because the mode of being an internet savvy, young, creative person is, it's humor. Sometimes it's irony. Sometimes it's not ironic, but it's a little bit wry. It's a little bit arched eyebrow. It's a little bit, yeah, I'm serious about this, but also, can you believe I'm serious about this? Mm-hmm. Like it's those things all at once. And that's all part of the modern mode package. And she does a good job with that. Lindsay, what a joy. What a pleasure.
It's been great.
Do you want to just recommend one Sam and Cat episode before we go?
I wish I could just like throw one out there off the top of my head. I mean, I'm sure whatever, just put it on random and whatever you get.
Okay. I will say one thing about Sam and Cat. I did not watch Sam and Cat in real time. I also, like you, watched it after the fact. I did, but my memory of it, and I hope I'm not wrong, and maybe someone will correct me on the Facebook group if I'm wrong. But like, my memory of it is in like the last few episodes of Sam and Cat, it's like you can literally see, it's just Ariana Grande being like, can you effing believe that I have to be on this show?
Yeah. I will
like,
admit,
like,
I
literally
didn't,
like almost like fourth far. Wall. Okay, it's like almost like fourth wall breaking. Like, she's not looking at the camera, but it's like she knows the camera's there.
Yeah.
And she knows you're watching her do this thing that she does not want to do.
That actually does kind of makes me want to watch it now.
Okay. So everybody has homework. Go watch the last few episodes of Sam and Cat.
Binge start the entire show.
Yeah, start a thread on the Facebook group. We'll get involved.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. I have been trying to understand changes in migration. So I traveled with photographer Federico Rios to the Darien Gap, this hot, mountainous, 70-mile stretch of jungle straddling the border of Colombia and Panama.
We're hiking through a river, just like covered in mud.
Many used to think that this route was impassable, but thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the Darien, almost all in the hopes of making it to the United States. We spent 9 days hiking through the gap and weeks building trust and relationships with migrants, with smugglers, with migration authorities to even be able to do this reporting. We interviewed hundreds of people who have made this journey to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths to find a new life. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
For our second conversation about Ariana and positions and the position of Ariana, Sha D'Souza is calling in all the way from Melbourne, where it is tomorrow. Shad, what's tomorrow like in Melbourne?
You know, it's pretty good. A little bit gloomy, but nothing too bad.
Shad, you reviewed Ari's record for The Fader. You write for The Fader along with a number of other publications. And you wrote a very considered negative review. And one of the things I like so much about this review, I like this record a lot. I like it way more than you do. But I know what it's like to write negatively, number one, about a very famous person, and number two, about someone whose music, generally speaking, you enjoy or at least have like respect and admiration for. And I thought you did like a really good job of mapping out what you thought Ariana was good at and then what this record did not do by that framework. And that's, I think, sort of like how good criticism should work. So I wanted to chat to you about your thinking in terms of pulling the review together and kind of like how you arrived at your perspective on the record. And then like jumping off from that, we can also just talk about why you think the record doesn't work, like more specifically. But can you tell me a little bit about your feelings about Ariana like prior to positions? Like where are you on the kind of engagement and enjoyment arcs?
Well, one, thank you for saying that about the review. I really appreciate it. But I would say I'm quite a big fan of Ariana's music. I think Thank You Next was probably my favorite pop record of last year. I really love Sweetener. And I would say I would happily kind of listen to any of her albums without skips, really. Like, I do really enjoy her music, and I think... And I really kind of ride, especially for kind of like Dangerous Woman, which I think is an underappreciated one. In
oh, yeah.
Catalog.
No, big record. Big record. Big, big, big record. Yep.
I'm very familiar with kind of her deep cuts as well as her singles, and I really love them. And I, like, on the weekend after reviewing Positions, I listened to Yours Truly and Dangerous Woman kind of like pretty much on repeat because I love those records.
Were you like cleaning your, were you cleansing your ear canals? Or were you just like, I have to just like wash out the record that I can't stand. I got to like replace it, re-wax it.
Perhaps not quite that intense, but reviewing Positions really reminded me how much I appreciate and love a lot of kind of like things that I see in Ariana Grande as quite idiosyncratic in terms of kind of the pop landscape. It was really nice to remind myself of what I find so kind of incredible about her music.
Okay, so then let's talk then about the specific letdown points on Positions for you. Because I feel like from reading your piece, you're coming at Positions from a similar angle as I was coming at it in terms of like big picture understanding of what Ariana's good at, what she's been trying to show, where she has kind of experimented or been loose. Like, I feel like we sort of were starting in the same place, but then veering far apart. So talk to me a little bit about what was really jumping out at you on Positions where you're like, huh, this is just itchy. This just does not sit right.
I think the main problem was that nothing really jumped out to me. And what I really like about her records is that they're incredibly spacious and they're incredibly dynamic. And I love the way she can kind of modulate her voice and do all these different things. And then I was listening to Positions a lot and hearing kind of like a lot of this kind of like breathy vocal range that I feel kind of has a habit of melting into the background. And I was hearing a lot of production that either sounds a lot like other stuff or just kind of sounds like nothing. In general, it just felt flat to me. And, you know, in many ways, I find that to be kind of more of a sin than if it was crazily bad, you know?
Absolutely. And I it's interesting because to me, the parts of the record that function the way that you're describing to me is the back third of the record. That's where it starts to get muddy for me. And I do think that with Ariana having the voice that she has, there can be and has been, I think, in spots on the prior albums, some concessions with production, which is to say she can take a relatively straightforward arrangement and really deliver on it to the point where you might not totally notice if the arrangement is a little bit regular. But there are a few songs towards the end of this record, and I'm thinking kind of like West Side Onward that kind of felt like that to me, where I was like, huh, the arrangement's not really doing a lot, and also the vocals are not doing a whole lot here either. So I feel that for sure.
I feel like she is one of the smartest vocalists we kind of have. Like, obviously she's an incredibly powerful vocalist, but she's also showy when she needs to be, and she's very considered when she doesn't need to be. And like, one of my favorite things that she's done in the past few years is like, she's used her whistle tone pretty much once on the records before this, since My Everything Maybe. You know, she did it at the end of Imagine, and it just kind of like hits so incredibly. And then here it's just everywhere, and it's in the background, and it's kind of like all over Nasty and all over My Hair, and it feels so almost like she's trying to signify hard work or talent without actually doing the same craftspersonship or kind of like consideration that really made the past record special. You know, when it's used so liberally, I find it very confusing and weird.
I agree that it was used more liberally here than in the past. I was seeing it more as there were a few specific gestures on this record, and Lindsay and I talked about this a little bit in the first segment, that seem very much oriented towards people who are very into R&B gestures. And so I was hearing that, and I was like, okay, there's a moment where I was like, huh, this is like a little maybe Jill Scott moment, or this is like maybe a little bit like late Whitney moment, or maybe this is a, with the whistle stuff, I was like, okay, these are like very overt tips of the hat to Mariah. Now, maybe a little too overt. And honestly, as I mentioned in the previous segment, like Mariah is still Mariah, like Ariana is great, but like Mariah is still going Mariah. It's a whole different ecosystem happening. But I was seeing those whistle tones through that framework more so than kind of like a cheap toss off, if that makes sense.
Even Mariah was always a lot more considered in her use of it, you know, she would always do that classic thing where she would kind of like build to it and then it would be the show-stopping moment, as opposed to kind of like in my hair, it's like very far in the background. Something about it to me, it's almost like I don't know why it's there, and I would rather it was really just like maybe on like one song on the record.
Hearing you say that reminds me of something that I had been thinking a little bit about this record. And also, I think the same thing about Thank You Next, in a way, which is Ariana's vocal talent. You've used the word considered a couple times. She's a very serious singer. And I don't mean serious like sober. You know, I mean like serious like she has great tone, great precision, great thoughtfulness about how she applies it. It can sometimes be disorienting to hear someone who has like a very specifically strong vocal talent make loose or seemingly more looser arbitrary choices because they don't quite line up. And I have moments, even though I love Thank You Next, and I really do like this record, I have moments where I'm kind of like, I would love to hear you just using like the full canon. You know what I mean? Like you have this big howitzer. I just want to hear you use it. That's what I personally, you know, we're different generations, but like that's what I was raised on. People had big voices. They're just out here piping all the time, you know? And sometimes when I hear her making a choice that's not that or that's a little bit left of that, I'm kind of like, huh, that's, you know, I guess that's okay. But I certainly know you can do all this other stuff.
I would say the same. I kind of allude to it in my review, but before this, since My Everything, or maybe since Dangerous Woman, she started each record with just kind of like an intro track where she just belts and kind of like, it's the kind of moment where your hair kind of stands on end. And it's just so, it's incredible. And just kind of like a reminder of like, it's almost like she's saying, okay, I could be doing this through the whole record, but like, I'm much more meticulous than that. And you know, but the fact of having that in the back of your mind is so, it really puts into perspective the rest of the record. And just the fact that there's no moments on this where she really belts and kind of like gives the full kind of like depth of her voice. And like I said before, a lot of her vocals on this are very kind of like breathy and very, and I get the point behind that, but it's, and I don't want to be prescriptive with how anyone
right,
should use their instrument, but right. It feels like that kind of contributes to the record's kind of like lack of dynamism or something.
I'm glad you brought up the idea of being prescriptive, because to step back from the specifics of the record and your take on the record, criticism is not meant to be prescriptive. And I think it's important, especially sometimes when we're engaging with folks who maybe are not totally aware of what the job of critic is. It's not my job to tell you, hey, do this record differently or da 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 da. It's a different process. It's a different ideological task. It's trying to take a work of art as it's being presented and then assess it through aesthetic historical frameworks that you or I or anyone as the critic have acquired over years and years and years of listening. It's not to say like tisk tisk, you got to sing more, you got to sing bigger, da da da. It's you made these choices. Are these choices effective? You know, you retweeted some of the less kind responses that you got. As someone who was doxxed this year, I certainly can relate somewhat to that experience. And for you as a critic to be on the receiving end, how was that for you? And kind of like, where what's your take on kind of writing about a very famous person and saying something not totally kind about them or about their art, rather?
In many ways, like I've grown up adjacent to stan culture. Like when I was a teenager, I kind of like saw the genesis of it on Tumblr, and then probably every year that I've been writing about music, I've had at least one moment where people have like threatened to kill me or kind of like taken photos from my Instagram and been like, look how ugly this guy is and stuff like that. And so in a weird way, I woke up, obviously my review was published overnight, and I woke up on the Saturday and saw my editor texted me and said, don't go on Twitter. And obviously I immediately went on Twitter and I saw all this stuff and I was just a bit like, okay, like they're kids. They really like this person. I can almost understand the impulse, but there comes a point, and maybe it's kind of like sad or whatever, where I'm just like, okay, I'm writing about this record. All I can do is be the most considered and be the most rigorous and kind of like careful that I can be with my argument. And as long as I'm happy with that, I can't take to heart them being like, you're a racist, which I still don't really understand. last I checked, Ariana Grande is definitely an Italian woman.
That's not how it works, kids. It's not actually how it works.
But this time, like every time it gets a little bit easier, and this time I was kind of like, okay, well, you know, they're kids. A lot of these things have like weird typos or don't make sense. And so it was easier, honestly.
As someone who has been through it more than one time, you know, I was feeling for you. And it's important, I think, that those of us who practice the art of criticism stand up for critics and for criticism. And it's a tough time on the internet to honestly assess positively and sometimes negatively the work of famous people.
It's impossible. And I'm interested to ask you, do you think you've seen a kind of smothering of critical discourse because of Stan attacks?
Yes.
Because,
yes.
Yeah, I can't help but feel, maybe I'm reading into it, but I can't help but feel with a lot of big pop albums this year that maybe there's been some kind of critical leniency.
Yeah, I do think the broader answer to that is yes, but I don't think it's purely Stan reactionary related. I think if you were to look at the arc of a pop star's career, like a successful pop star's career, and let's just use Ariana, just generally speaking, if you see it as kind of like a series of like upward waves where it's growing and it's growing and it's kind of like forward moving and getting bigger. What I do think is that many publications, it doesn't behoove a publication, generally speaking, to not participate in that wave. So it's not simply that like rabid 13-year-olds on Twitter are going to like dig through the writer's Instagram and like pull an unflattering photo and like be mean about it. It's not just that. It's that the overall arc of someone's career on the internet, it's a moving thing. It's happening with or without you. And I think many publications are just kind of like, it's easier to ride this along with the already growing storm or whatever. It's easier to kind of like go with it than go against it. And so I think what you see, and this is true, I think, especially very early in people's careers, where, like, let's take Megan for an example, right? Imagine someone writing like a really negative review of a Megan record right now. It would just seem so strange and kind of like out of context. And most people are experiencing Megan as this phenomenon. And I think more or less correctly. But I think for a writer and by extension a publication to stand up and say, yes, we acknowledge the phenomenon, but here are some structural issues or here are some aesthetic issues, I would say that has been beaten out of a lot of people by the overall energy of how fame accrues. And stan culture is part of that, but it is not the totality of it.
I guess also most writers now will be kind of like freelance, and it's a lot more beneficial to get 1 million retweets than 1 million comments.
Well, and this is the other thing, and I should probably do a whole separate episode on this, but this is the other thing. The shrinking of the gap between the writer and the artist, like when you are literally reviewing someone or profiling someone, then you're adding them in your tweet. It's like you're initiating a dialogue with that person. I don't try not to tweet anymore because like I'm just old and I just don't want to be involved in Twitter if I can avoid it. But like I never added people. Like my job is not, I didn't review the Ariana record or whatever record to then knock on Ariana's door and be like, hey, I reviewed your record. You know what I mean? I don't do that. Maybe like once or twice I wrote a profile of someone and added them. But like big picture, it's just not something I do because I think that in order to maintain critical distance, you got to leave up that wall. And that wall is like, I didn't review this record for you. I didn't review it for your fans. I reviewed it because I had something to say. And the critic as an artist in their own right is something that I think still should be fought for. So I do think that shrinking where people are like, I want to write about whoever because I want them to notice me, because I want them to retweet me, because I want them to feel closer, or like I feel closer to them, that's a terrible impulse. And I think that's going to do potentially irreparable damage to music criticism in the long run.
I would say it probably has already to some degree.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I think, you know, like when I'm reading your review, I'm like, here's someone who knows his stuff about Ariana, but no Ariana fan is going to be like, well, this is a very considered negative review. This is a very thoughtful negative review. It's like, it's just negative. You know, me writing about Taylor, it's like, I'm like the only person that like Reputation, but it's just like, it's easier to just dox me because I don't like fit the prevailing narrative. So I do think all of those things that we just discussed create like a horrible environment for criticism about well-known people, and by extension, less well-known people, although there's just less criticism generally of them overall. So anyway, this has been really depressing, and I'm glad that we're closing out on this subject, but I'm glad that you called in, and I'm glad that we got a chance to talk about this, and I'm glad that you wrote this review, and I totally don't agree with it, but I'm grateful for it.
Can I ask you one thing on that note?
Yeah.
Do you hear another hit on it aside from Positions?
Here's the answer to that question. I think the Doja Cat song will be successful, but I don't think it's that. I think it's mid. I don't think it's a great song, but I can see that song being successful in a way where I'm just like, okay, yeah, of course that's on Z100 all the time. So that, I would not be surprised if My Hair or Nasty end up getting run December, January sometime. I could see that happening. I don't know if it's a guarantee, but I can see that happening. As far as like hit, like banger, smash.
Like Seven Rings level.
No. What about 6:30? 6:30, you know, that bouncy Ariana singing style. Like if you had told me 6:30 had come off of Thank You Next, you know, like 10 years from now, if you were just like, oh yeah, that was on Thank You Next, I'd probably have been like, yeah, it could have happened. Could have happened. And actually we'll go out on 6:30 just to drill it home. Shad, yo, thank you so much. I'm so glad to talk to you and appreciate you calling.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is our show. Thank you to Lindsay. Thank you to Shad. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com, with any questions or thoughts. Get on the Facebook group, potentially soon to be Reddit or Discord. Subscribe to podcast anywhere you get audio, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, etc., etc. Our producer, After Dark, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week.
Even if one day I lose it and go crazy, I know that you're kind of heavy. I just want to tell you directly. So boy, let me know if you're ready. Are you down? What's up? Are you down? What's up? Are you down? Are you down?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.